Forgive us our debts. Our subject this morning is debt. One of the most common things in America today, no one seems to really understand it, but everybody has one. Everybody has a debt, and almost no one understands the idea of debt and where it should be in our life. And Americans should understand, if anybody should, because God knows we have it around us enough, we should know something about it. Our whole economic system runs on debt. Every American citizen lives, operates on debt. Almost everyone. It's probably the most misunderstood thing in our land. America itself is in debt to the banks. The national debt now, I understand, is several trillion dollars. Now, can anybody here imagine what several trillion dollars is? Let me give you an idea of just what $1 trillion is. Here's an illustration. Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt about 1450 B.C. approximately. In other words, about 3,450 years ago. If Moses, at that time, could have started a machine that would count one number, just one, two, three, four, and just keep counting one number per second, and it started at that time, and it continued to count toward 1 trillion. One number per second. And if it would have run day and night continuously until today, it would be about 1/9 of the way there. And to complete the counting, it would have to continue to run for another 28,000 years before it would count by one to 1 trillion, one a second. Now remember, America is in debt several trillion. Apparently 5 trillion is a conservative estimate from what I've heard. I don't know exactly how they would ever compute it. They seem fairly safe in saying 5 trillion. Now, to go to 5 trillion, it means that this counting machine would have to continue for another 155,000 years to count to 5 trillion. Now, let's say that you were picked to have the privilege of paying off the bankers. That's who this debt's owed to, by the way. And so you were going to extinguish this national debt of $5 trillion. To do it, you would have to pay them in $100 bills. You would count out $100 bills. If you would count one $100 bill per second, and if you worked 12 hours a day doing it, it would take you a little over 3,000 years to pay it all off. That's at $100 a whack. America's debt is quite substantial. Before the days of computers, I don't think anybody would have even considered the idea of a debt of $1 trillion, much less 5 trillion. Every child that's born into this land comes into the world with a debt of several thousand dollars before he ever breathes first, and the figure's going up. America is also in debt to other nations, not just to the national debt, but it's in debt to other nations now. America's international trade balance is now in the red. America's always been an exporting nation until recently. Our export-import trade now has a deficit of over $150 billion per year. That's a deficit. That means we owe them that much more than they owe us. So now we're an importing nation. Now, where there's debt, then there is, on the other side of the coin, profit, right? Isn't that the way that works? And where there's this much debt, somebody somewhere is making a killing, aren't they? Somebody is making some money. Somebody's getting rich and powerful. Now, we've been telling from the pulpit about the evils of usury, which is really the main evil of our land possibly today. And we've been telling about the evils of usury for some time, but I don't know if we've ever really considered debt. We know that usury is theft. We know that usury is absolutely wrong. But I don't know if we've ever really covered the question of debt. Is debt wrong? Debt's not necessarily usury, you see. We know the laws of God are against usury, but we don't know
if every debt is a usurious debt, apparently not all debt is usurious. Some debt is probably usurious, but not necessarily all of it. So I thought perhaps we should address the question, what about just debt, period, just plain debt? Is it okay or is it bad? The best I can tell from reading as much as I can on it about debt through the Bible and through history and the laws of the land, debt is not a sin in itself, but it's the next thing to it. Debt's not a sin, it's just stupid. Now, I'm saying this aside from those who find themselves in debt for reasons for which they cannot help. I'm not addressing that issue. I'll address that later. But right now I'm talking about those who volunteer into debt when they don't necessarily need it. The Bible doesn't say thou shalt not get in debt, but it certainly warns us against the evils of being in debt, doesn't it? It warns us that if we can, we should stay out of debt. So a person can get in debt without sinning, but in my estimation, it's nigh impossible for a person to stay in debt all of his life without either falling into sin along the way and or cheating himself and his family out of the inheritance and the blessings that God would have them to have. The first and perhaps the greatest thing that a debtor loses is his freedom. Now that's brought out in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 7. Proverbs 22 verse 7. Mark this one down and memorize it. Proverbs 22, 7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Now that's a most important law. That's not just a scripture. That's not just a nice saying. That's a law. And you can count on it. That's a law of nature. A law of economics. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Now, a servant is a slave in any other language. A debtor is a slave, and that means that America is a slave nation. We're a slave nation. And Americans are slave people. Now, we hear a lot of good sermons, and we hear a lot of good lectures from patriots, and we know a lot of people who are doing all that they can across this land, traveling and lecturing and preaching and teaching, trying to help Americans understand this thing about freedom. There are probably a zillion different ways that our freedom is being infringed upon. But you know, I don't know of one area that's more important to teach than for us to tell our people that if they want freedom, that they had better not borrow money. And if they are in debt, they had better start working right now, immediately, if not sooner, to get out of debt. If there is one heavy board that's held over our head, it's debt. Now, we can do a lot of things wrong, but boy, when we're in debt, they have power over us to do whatever they want. The rich ruleth over the poor. Now, we've been poor for some time. Perhaps we should ask ourselves, why have we been so poor? Is it because we have let them loan us money? So, we need to start getting out of debt, and we need to start telling our people to get out of debt. Don't owe people if you want to be free. Now, patriots are involved with teaching freedom, and ministers now are involved with teaching freedom. We have a freedom movement going across this country. A lot of people are concerned about freedom that didn't even think about the word much a few years ago. How are we going to be free if we don't become free of debt? We can't. It's impossible. To be a free man, you have to be out of debt. The term free man is not used a whole lot anymore. Some years ago, it was used, and one of the things that it meant was that you were not in debt. It meant that you were solvent. among other things. All across America right now, patriots should be learning to get out of debt. I don't know of any other more important thing to tell them other than to obey God. That's part of it. Get out of personal debt. Now, we live in a debt system, and we're not going to get out of debt totally as a unit as long as we have this debt money system and so forth on us. But we can get out of personal debt. We can get the bankers and Sears and Roebuck and the telephone company and other people who we seem to want to pay interest to and let the debt slide over. We can get them off of our back, and we can get ourselves to where the courts are not a threat to us the first time we step out of line and say something that the big boys don't like. We can get ourselves out of personal debt. Stop borrowing money. If you don't owe money to the bank for everything you possess, then you won't be a slave to the bankers' bureaus. You know who the bankers' bureaus are? The IRS. These people work for the bank. The IRS, the Federal Reserve, the corporations across this land, and that includes their corporate police and courts. The police systems that you see across this land, the municipal, the state, the FBI, and the rest of them, are corporate police systems. They work for corporate structure. The courts that help the police enforce those corporate laws are corporate courts. Get out of debt, and those institutions are out of power. Get out of debt. Now, I'm very happy to tell you that I'm out of debt. You don't know how happy I am to tell you that. I haven't always been out of debt. I grew up. Before Vicki and I got married, we went down to the furniture store and picked out our furniture and bought it on time. It was a strange furniture store because they didn't charge us interest on the loan. But that was the first and last time that happened, I can tell you. And we had, we ignorantly went right into it, just like everybody else around us did. And it wasn't until not too long ago that I got out of debt. And I swear, God willing, I will never get in debt again. God willing. It's not a sin to be in debt. But it may not be too smart. But maybe some of you want to be a slave. I don't know. The Bible doesn't say it's a sin to be a slave. It's not a sin. You can be a slave if you want. The Bible allows for that. It tells you how to become an indentured slave. It tells the rules of how to become an indentured slave. It tells you even if you want to be a permanent slave. It tells you that you can go and stand by the doorpost. The master can take a sharp rod and pierce your ear with it. That meant that you were indentured to him for the rest of your life. You were a permanent slave. If you don't want to be free, you can be a slave. But maybe some of us don't want to be a slave. The Constitution provides that you can contract your way into slavery lawfully. You can do it. You can contract your way into slavery by putting your name on a mortgage contract, and you're in slavery. Now, sometimes it may be beneficial to someone to be enslaved for a period of time. I don't know. I'm not saying that it's a sin. I'm only saying ask for sure. Make sure that you want to do this thing before you get into it. And for God's sake, don't commit yourself to a life of debt. So we need to be telling our people these things so that they can begin to make intelligent decisions instead of going blindly into this stuff thinking that that's the American way. It hasn't been the American way until recently, and God willing, it won't be the American way in the near future. At least I hope that it won't be. Our people have been slaves for so long they don't know what it's like to be free. You remember that's what happened to the Israelites when they were led out of Egypt. They had been slaves for 400 years. They went out into freedom, and my goodness, they almost died of fright. First thing that they said was, we got to get back in there, because they had better food and they had better facilities and so forth. They didn't like this freedom. Scared them to death. Our people today probably wouldn't recognize freedom if you hit them over the head with it. Really, it scares you. Freedom is really scary. You're not used to it. But it's important that we start getting out of debt. The first thing that you do, if you're in debt, the first thing you do to get out of debt is stop borrowing money. Stop living off of borrowed money. Do without that television set until you can pay cash for it. I got one, didn't I? Do without that car. Do without the things that you can do without. If it's any possible way that you can do without something that until you can pay for it, then do it. And if you can talk your family or any of your friends out of borrowing money, you'll have done them the greatest favor that you could ever do. And I'm thankful to a man when I was farming. He made me just so mad I couldn't believe it. I wanted a loan to farm on, and he told me that I shouldn't do it. See, he was a loan officer. And I was getting myself into some problems. As I look back, I can see that I was probably getting myself into a situation that would have been my downfall. And he looked at my application, and he said, you know, he said, you're asking for trouble here. He says, I don't think you better do this. And in fact, he says, I don't think I want to give it to you. And boy, I was mad. Man, I could have called him every name in the book. And I went home, and I hated that guy for some time until I came to my senses some years later, and I thought, well, maybe he wasn't such a bad guy after all. He probably wasn't out to just ruin me. But he may have done me one of the greatest favors that anybody ever did, and it made me mad at the time. But someone who can talk you out of taking a loan may just be doing you the greatest favor of anybody that you can come across. The more of us that get out of debt personally, the more freedom we will see collectively in America. Now, things have not always been the way that they are right now. Back in history, before our people became so debt-oriented, it wasn't considered very sensible to find yourself in a lot of debt. In fact, not too many decades ago, people who held debts on other people were considered evil people. They were considered evil people. Kind of like what modern America would think of a slave trader. That's kind of the way that people who held debts were thought of not too long ago. And one of the names that these people had was merchants. Merchants. Then they became merchant bankers. But you see, merchants today, and bankers as well, are thought of as the cream of the crop for the society, right? Things have changed. Things have not always been the same. People who traded in debt were called merchants, at least for a while. In other words, they bought and sold at equity, or in other words, they created an international system of equity where they could sell and trade and buy in debt. They facilitated and created a system of debt, you might say. And by the same token, they were hated by the, I guess you could call them, the fundamental Christians of the day. And perhaps you can understand then why it says in Revelation 18, let me quote to you these three scriptures from Revelation 18, verse 3. Now, as you know, Revelation 18 is speaking of the fall of Babylon. Revelation 18, verse 3, for all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, that's Babylon's fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. See, they put that word merchant in there because when this Bible was written, they probably thought of merchants a little bit differently than we do today. Verse 11, and the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. And verse 15, the merchants of those things which were made rich by her shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. Now these are merchants, people who deal in the merchandise of Babylon, debt and slavery. Christians of the Middle Ages railed against the merchants and claimed that they were making usurious profits from their merchandise. A Christian tract of that time says, quote, if not only with money merchants carry on usury, but with all property and goods whatsoever, when they do not keep within the fair or reasonable prices such as clerical and secular law prescribes. You see, at that time, usury was when you got outside of the bounds of the laws that were, the guidelines that were laid by the clergy, the church. The church declared what was usury and what wasn't usury. One of the things that they declared that was usury was interest on money. But that wasn't the only areas where usury was declared. It was declared in any area where excessive profit was made. And that was against the law. Erasmus is quoted as saying, quote, "They are the vilest and most contemptible of men, carrying on the most despicable of all industries, lying, perjuring themselves, imposing upon others, and then setting themselves up as the first in the land." It's precisely what their merchants are doing today. They're called bankers today. Dealing in debt, as you see, has been a despised profession for centuries, for millenniums, until recently. Now it's the most sought-after profession, and the people who practice this abomination are the most powerful and respected men in the communities. Something has gone off track here. We've lost our sanity. And we have to get back on track. The usurers haven't changed, but somebody did. It's been us. We've changed. It may be that the love of money is what changed us. It may be that that's what makes us willing to get into slavery very easily. The love of money is the root of all evil. But if we didn't love money so much and worship it, perhaps we wouldn't be so quick. Maybe we would hold back and think about it before we went down and signed our name on there and became a slave. Ecclesiastes 10:19 says, "A feast is made for laughter, wine make merry, but money answers all things." Now, if money answers all things, then anyone who controls the money controls what? All things. Anyone who has a debt over you controls you and your things. In Romans chapter 13, verse 8, Paul tells us this, and this is another one to put down and memorize. Romans 13, 8, "Owe no man anything but to love one another." Now, economic guidelines are very simple. It's not hard to stay economically sound. You don't have to go to college and study Adam Smith and von Mises and the experts, so-called experts, to understand some of these basic things. "Owe no man anything but to love one another." When a person owes a debt that he can't pay, he becomes a different person. It changes him. He loses himself, you might say. He becomes not only indentured to the lender, but he becomes embittered. He's an embittered slave, and he loses track of his life. Paul speaks on the same issue of being a slave in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting in verse 20. Now, if you're a debtor, and I know that a lot of you are, don't get the idea that I'm trying to lambast you. I'm not. I'm merely trying to point some, I think, relevant issues out here. I'm not trying to say anything bad about you if you're a debtor. I'm only telling you that it may be in your interest to consider this thing very carefully. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting in verse 20. "Let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. Art thou called being a servant?" Remember, the borrower is servant to the lender. Now, remember who the servant is. "Art thou called being a servant?" Was there ever a servant that wasn't in debt? Is there any way of being a servant without being in debt? I don't know of any. As far as I know, the way of being a servant, the way that you become a slave, is you become in debt. Was there ever a voluntary slavery without a debt in money or goods or something of worth? I don't think there was. I think that slavery can be described as owing money. Now, the question is, how are you going to pay it back? Are you going to pay it back with service, or are you going to pay it back with gold, or what are you going to pay it back with? The period of time between the time that debt is incurred until it's paid off is a period of slavery to whoever is in debt. Now, 1 Corinthians 7, again, starting in verse 20. "Let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. Art thou called being a servant? care not for it, but if thou mayest be free, use it rather. It's not a sin to be a slave, but if you can be free, be free rather. For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise also he that is called, being free, is Christ's servant. Ye are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. If we sell ourselves to men, we've just sold ourselves twice. We're already sold to Jesus. Now that's not lawful, I don't think, to sell yourself twice. Now, Paul says, if you can be free, be free. Don't be a servant. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, we read the results of giving someone the power to create debt in the land. Deuteronomy 28. You see, not only do we have to be careful personally, but nationally, as a society, we have to be careful what we put up with in our land, what we authorize. Deuteronomy 28, starting in verse 43. The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee. How does the stranger get up high, and how do we get low? He shall lend to thee. And thou shalt not lend to him. People who lend money, people who are in the business of borrowing money or lending money, are in the business of war. Do you understand that? That's war. That's subjugating people. That's subjugating states. That's subjugating nations. To put them in debt to you is to subjugate them. The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee, and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed. It's war. Because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments, and his statutes which he commanded thee. And they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder and upon thy seed forever, because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. Therefore shalt thou serve thine enemies, which the Lord shall send against thee. Now since debt is a rather dangerous thing, and since it's liable to put you in a very precarious situation, it stands to reason that you had better be very careful who you accept a loan from. If you get a loan from someone who doesn't have your welfare in mind, he can end up with your house and your car and your television set and everything else. Banks and loan sharks are not your friends. They're not in business to help you, regardless of what they say in their ads. Loans have always been dangerous to people. Now, for that reason, I believe God, in His law, made provisions to protect people against their own stupidity. God's law has clauses in it to provide for those who fall in debt. Because it's not right that a person should have to pay for the rest of his life for one mistake, right? It's not right for the next generation to have to pay for the mistakes that this generation made. So God's law has a principle in it, and it's based on this. It's wrong to keep a person in debt for a long time. I don't care what he's promised you, it's wrong to keep a man in debt for the rest of his life. In Exodus chapter 22, verse 25, if thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as an usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. Okay? The first provision is not to charge him interest on what he borrows from you. The second part is, if thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, that's collateral. If you take his coat for collateral, make sure that he pays the debt. If thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, thou shalt deliver it unto him by that the sun goeth down. Okay, now there's a principle which says you can only keep collateral for a very short time. You can't hold this up against him forever. give it back to him by the time the sun goes down so he can have it when it gets cold. Now that will discourage a lot of usury lenders. Another provision is that no debt can last for more than 6 years. All outstanding debts are forgiven every six years, and that's in Deuteronomy 15. You know, I was listening to the radio one day three or four years ago, and a man came on there, and he was a bankruptcy officer. And you know, bankruptcy officers are looked down upon like something bad. And at the time, I have to admit that I really probably thought he was too, because I didn't understand some of this. And he came on there, and he had the audacity to say that he thought he was a good guy. He thought he was helping people. He thought he was on the up and up. And he helped people break contracts of mortgages and loans, and he helped them to go bankrupt and get out of debt. And I thought at the time, my goodness, you know, that guy, how does he stay alive, you know? He's got to have enemies. And I couldn't understand how he could do that with a clear conscience. You know, if somebody owes you some money and somebody else says, well, we'll just fix this where he doesn't have to pay you, that can be upsetting, can't it? But you know, God's law has within it a bankruptcy clause, and this is it right here. At the end of every 7 years, thou shalt make a release. Do you know what the statute of limitations on bankruptcy is? 7 years. Isn't that coincidence? And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor that lendeth aught unto his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbor or of his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. This man made the statement on the radio at the time that every 7 years, every man and woman in our land has the right to cancel all debt. He didn't say it because of this, but I think he probably could have pointed this out if somebody would have been there to listen to him. He knew more than I did at the time. Now, when these laws are reenacted in our land, it'll just about destroy you-know-who. It's going to destroy those guys, those bankers. And it's going to be a huge step in the direction of freedom. And then we'll have that saying that we read about in the Jubilee, proclaim liberty throughout all the land. Freedom will come through that. But the most often asked question is this. Gosh, without banks and without loans and without debt, how will I ever be able to buy a house? How will I ever be able to buy a car? How will I ever be able to start a business? How will I be able to buy a farm without a bank to loan me the money? Now, in the first place, I've already warned you against the possible dangers of getting in debt. But the answer to the question is this. In a godly system, you wouldn't have to borrow money to buy a farm, to buy a car, or buy a house. Your daddy would give you a house. He'd help you get set up in business, and you could work his farm when he dies. Do you understand the ramifications of that? And today, even today, we have Christian parents who won't help their children get in business when they can. They want to sell the kids the business. My God. Saddle them for the rest of their life and put them in debt to the enemy. So stay out of debt. And even if you can't get into your family business without going into debt for it, don't do it. Give it back to them. You don't need it. You don't need debt. You don't need to be enslaved to your enemy. It's no good to have property that they can take any time that they want. That's no good. That's no way to live. Life's too short to have to worry about losing your property every time somebody doesn't like something that you do. We don't know how to enjoy life in this country. Maybe the reason is because we're all in debt. Loans prescribed in the Bible were not for the purpose of carrying on business. Do you know that? Loans in the Bible were not for the purpose of buying houses, buying cars, and setting yourself up in business. What were loans for? The Bible speaks of lending. But you know what they were for? Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 15 again. Starting in verse 7. If there be any among you, a poor man, of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thy heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother. But thou shalt open thine hand widely unto him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient for his need, in that which he wanteth. That's loans, Bible style. That's a biblical loan. One of compassion. Biblical loans are not for running businesses. They're not for making a profit. I have found no place in the Bible that suggests the loan is for a business venture. I have never found that. But rather, loans are for the poor in the land. Loans are to help people. And if you're a lender, you better be a lender for the purpose of helping somebody, not for the purpose of earning your living from them by the money that you lend them. It's a compassion, an act of compassion. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 12, the Lord's Prayer, we're instructed to pray that God will, quote, forgive our debts. Now, I know that when he said that, I don't think he was referring directly to indebtedness like what I'm speaking of. But it is interesting, and curious at least, that he used the word debt and sin interchangeably, because both debt and sin put you in a similar situation. They put you under someone. Debt puts you under the person that you owe, and sin puts you under the law. But until our nation forgives its debts, it may be that God can't forgive our nation's debts, its sins. And until we get our dumb Israelite brothers to stop volunteering themselves into this debt slavery, until we can stop at both ends, you understand, make it illegal to enslave people for the rest of their lives, and teach our brethren not to volunteer into slavery on every whim, until we stop it at both ends, it may be that we won't be out of trouble. Now, those of you who can remember, it was those people who were not in debt who survived the Depression, wasn't it? It wasn't the big fellows. It wasn't those people with millions of acres of land that kept their farms. It was those smart old Germans and others who knew not to get in debt. And they kept their properties, even if it was only 3 or 4 acres. And they survived, and they didn't have to give it to the bankers. I found these two quotes. I'll close with them. I found these in a book with quotes under the heading of debt. First one is, there is but one safe, sound, sensible rule in money affairs, and that is to pay as you go or don't go. And the second one I thought was really good. It says, many of us are like the letter B, in debt with no need for it. See? Not bad, huh? Come out of Babylon. Maybe that means get out of debt. And quit doing business with the whore of Babylonian money system. Quit doing business with her. Let's stand. Our Father, the God of Israel, there must be a million things that we have to straighten up our lives. Lord God, I just pray that one by one, and as you see fit, you'll bring these things to light before our eyes. We see that your hand is moving across this land, and we just feel that you're leading us and that we are beginning to follow. Lord, we thank you for that leading, and we just pray that the fire might grow and that this following would grow into a thing that would be not only recognized by the enemies, but feared greatly and eventually completely extinguish the enemy's efforts. Open our eyes, Lord, to these evils that we've fallen prey to, sometimes without even thinking. Open our eyes, Lord, in Jesus we pray. Amen.